It's wonderful to be here. Just thinking about it, I think it's been over 2 years since I've been here, so a long time. Let us go within and focus on the heart center. It's at the center of your chest, a little bit different than your physical heart is. Within the yoga physiology, there is a subtle body that is within this physical body that, once tapped into, gives you access, ultimately, unto spiritual consciousness. By focusing on the heart center, you rise above the daily concerns that generally preoccupy us, and you move into a new realm, a realm that transcends personality, objects, and taps you into a conscious connection with divine love. Divine love is different than human love, which generally focuses itself on a particular object. That is the thing that I love. That is the person that I love, and so on. That is the way that we love in a human sense. Divine love is a state unto itself, an existence unto itself, a subject without an object. It is whole and complete. And you experience, you feel that love in a powerful way. And it lifts you above everything human and into the divine realms. It's an ecstatic state, a blissful state. And so focusing on that heart center, right in the center of your chest, and then just feeling and seeing within your mind's eye a beautiful spiritual light there. And that light begins to grow. You see it expanding beyond just simply your body. And that light fills up this room. And your consciousness expands with it. You too feel as if you now inhabit the entirety of this room. Only it is an inhabitant of light and of love and of peace. Then you go on expanding that circle of light. And you see it expanding out into this entire community, the town of Victoria and all the precincts around it. And you feel that light growing and growing. And you are love incarnate. You are that light. You are the perfection and the purity of that love. And it naturally saturates all the people, all the places, as you think of yourself as that expanded light. And then you go on expanding that light until you see this entire world as if you are looking at it from outer space, and you see it as a tiny globe, and it is in a sea of this light and this love. And you see the entire world saturated with that love. That when all hearts are attuned to that love, people have a natural feeling of kindredness, not just towards those who are in their family or friends, but for all humanity, for all creation. And you feel everything living in harmony with that purity of light and love. And you can go on expanding that circle until it fills the galaxy, until it fills the entirety of space, going out and out and out. But you effortlessly expand with it. And then you reflect on the fact of this little tiny body floating on this little tiny planet. And it too is part of that sea of love and light. But it is just such a tiny little expression of everything that is. And that time and space lose their definition and meaning as you merge yourself into that light and to that love. Through visualization, you open yourself into a reality that you can actually have that experience, that you can know the truth and the reality of it. It is for this universal vision that we gather and that we come together today, and that we are focused on this reality. In the beginning, it is a mental conception, but that mental conception can grow into a living reality that you live and breathe. And you become one with that. Like to read today from Swami Ram Dass, where he describes just that kind of experience that he had. He began chanting the name of God. Now we were listening to Swami Ram Dass, Papa as he is known, chanting on the recording, the Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram, meaning victory to God, victory to God. And he chanted that over and over again as his meditation, as a mantra. And through that chanting, and then he would remember the attributes of God. You are all purity, you are all love, you are all joy, and so on. And he would repeat these things to himself. And he would feel lifted up into bliss, into joy. And then there were times when he would be brought back down into what we might say normal human consciousness. And then he would experience that lack of that supreme joy that he had been feeling before. And he was chanting and chanting, and suddenly the chant seemed to take him over. And it guided his mind, it guided his footsteps. And he went out penniless, and with just one cloth, extra cloth, eventually a little bag with his dentures in it, and nothing else. And he relied completely on God to guide him, to direct him. One time he was walking down a mountaintop, and he was coming down and down, and he got into a very steep area, and he realized at some point he could neither go further down nor could he go further back up. He was just in a tough situation. And he was chanting God and thinking about God, and suddenly his attention was drawn just a little ways over, and there he saw the very tippy top of a tree. And he was very carefully able to maneuver himself over, and he was able to get onto that tree and climb it all the way down to the ground. And he said when he looked back at the tree, it was the tallest tree he'd ever seen. He had no idea that it was there. When he was climbing down, he was completely reliant on that inner intelligence, on that inner guidance. And it took him all over India, and people treated him, some of them treated him very well, others not so well. But to him, it was all God. Every person was. And one time he was talking to a policeman, and the policeman was saying, "You're telling me God is everywhere, even in this room?" And Papa said, "Yes, of course." And he says, Where in this room is God?" And Papa patted him on the heart, and he says, "Right here, right here." So he was caught up, he was swept up into this way of seeing the world and chanting God's name and feeling bliss. And his feet, which were bare, would sometimes be blistered and they would have cuts. And he felt none of it. He just felt the bliss. So this is what he, eventually as the mind became purified, that he became absolutely enamored with this bliss and so consumed him that it consumed his sense of I-ness. And now he was only that ecstasy. He was only in that bliss. So from this writing entitled, I Live in Ecstasy Always. I am the life of all lives. I am the power of all powers. I am greater than the greatest, smaller than the smallest. I am simply wonderful. To wonder at myself with all the highest power of my imagination is to merge into the wonderful being and become a wonder myself. I live in ecstasy always. I live in ecstasy always. I try to find out who this I is. Who is this I? Who am I? What answer is what? Silence is the answer by which I come to know what the I signifies. In the silence it is there. There is no such thing as I or you. In the silence it is. Joy thrills and thrills every fiber of my being. Every atom of my frame is dancing with joy. From every pore of my being, I am oozing out nothing but pure and unalloyed joy. To die in this state is in not death. To die in this state in not death. It is something beyond death and life. It is a state of perennial ecstasy, everlasting bliss, eternal bliss, changeless, ever remaining the same and same. There is one song, one strain that is sung, that is heard, and that is the symphony of joy, the music of true delight. In the abundance of overflowing joy, I speak. My words are varied expressions of joy. All that I talk begins in joy, moves in joy, and ends in joy. In the stillness of my body, in the activity of all its members, in the cessation and movement of my mind and my intellect, there is all joy, joy. My objectless laughter is the best definition of that joy. I am at all times intoxicated with joy, which I cannot describe, which I cannot describe. Sri Yukteswar one time defined God realization as ever new joy. Thanks to Rebecca, I've been prompted to return back to my notes from Anandashram in 1998-99. I had published the words around that during my pilgrimage time, and then I arrived at Anandashram and was to spend 4 months there under Swami Satchidananda. And so I took notes while I was there, kept a diary, and so I've been working on those, and I thought I'd read you a little bit because it pertains to the process of coming to this point of joy and seeing everything as God. Starts with this quote from Papa Ram Dass, "The world is God at all times. The playful nature of it in which every kind of creature and event exists as it should be. What is needed is a change within you, by which you open your true sight and look upon the world as the Leela, or the play of the Lord." When Swami Satchidananda first read something from Papa Ram Dass, he said, Papa was saying, the world is perfect exactly as it is. And Swami Satchidananda had an interesting response to that. He wasn't Swami Satchidananda at the time. He was a young man who was feeling very badly about the world. Went through times of depression, even thought of times of taking his life, his own life. And he thought to himself when he read that the world is perfect exactly as it is. He thought it would take a very great man to be able to say that. That's an interesting reaction. So this is December 7th, continued at 6:45 a.m. To achieve the universal vision is not an easy task. It means to see all people and all situations as being perfect, just as they are. When Swami Satchidananda first read something written by Papa, it said, the world is exactly as it should be. Swamiji thought to himself, it must take someone very great to say such a thing. Indeed, someone who attains the universal vision, what is called Purushottama, is truly very great. I have had a recent example of God's sense of play in this regard. Early morning chanting includes the use of a tambourine played by the lead singer and accompanied by another playing finger cymbals. There's a large man who sits on the stool and clangs the finger cymbals and does it in such a way that it is loud and penetrating. In fact, I feel the vibration of these cymbals painfully moving through my bones and head. This creates no little amount of agony for me. When chanting is at the normal rhythm of play, the cymbal player breaks protocol by taking the lead from the tambourine player and loudly picks up the pace. At such times, it was difficult for me to be in the same room as this intrusive cymbal sounds. Thus is the stage set for my test, with actors and props at the ready, all at Ram's direction, all at God's direction. With the pain from the cymbals reaching a peak, my critical mind is brought to the surface, just as God intended. Oh, how he loves to clang those cymbals. He does not walk and sing as the others. He just sits there and thinking he controls the whole thing with that awful sound. It pierces me right through. Why doesn't he play softer? If he were more devotional, play with the love of the Nam, he would play not so loud, etc., 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 went my mind. The play had been enacted for consecutive days, and after a few days of such penetrating analysis on my part of the motivation and state of mind of the cymbal player, God raises a mirror that reflects my mind. Look where your mind is. You're supposed to be singing to God with all of your heart, mind, and soul. Instead, you are focused on this fellow, who is none other than God himself. Only you don't recognize him as such. How easily your mind is deceived. With this inner instruction, I now looked upon the cymbal player as God, and suddenly I saw the humor of it all. It is God who is testing me in that form. God is smiling inside, watching my mind, laughing at the self-righteous prison I had constructed for myself. The singing and the cymbals continued just as they had before this correction, but now my head no longer hurts. In fact, I am swimming in the bliss of God's presence. What a game of hide-and-seek. God hides behind every form that comes before me, and when I really look for him, he laughingly reveals his presence. Then I pray, O Divine Mother, teach me to see it is you who is hiding behind the mask of creation. In pulling down the mask, the Mother alone is revealed. O sweet Purushottama Papa, manifest your vision in me. Make me see God as both manifest and unmanifest, without a break or flaw. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Then December 7th continued. Today at the 3:30 reading, a newly arrived man sits next to me. With what delight he listens to the reading. Like a gourmand of fine foods, this devotee shows delight with every taste and nuance from Papa as he takes in every word and every thought. Vigorously shaking his head in agreement is only the start of the fun. As he listens, his hands move as if he's directing a symphony or keeping time with beautiful music. Certain delectable ideas creates a moaning sound of scrumptious agreement. Oh, with what rapt attention he gives to every word, nay, every syllable. At certain punctuated moments, his head rocks. Agreeable sounds emerge from him and his hands hit his thighs in perfect accord. With what obvious relish he displays for Papa's spoken words. Oh, Ram, you come in all forms. Some to teach us, some to test us, some are just for the plain fun of it. Thank you for today, for this particularly satisfying fun you made when coming in this new form. December 8th. Dispassion and getting bugged. The fun of this morning was the entrance of a new Swami during the singing at the Mandir. His tonal quality of singing was strictly designed to be a pain to anyone who is not deaf. Despite the cymbal clanging, as described before, the voices in the morning are really very fine. The leader's voice, a tailor by trade during the day, is exquisite. Several who answer in chorus have well-developed harmonies. It is this exact pleasure that has made the cymbal clanging all the more painful. For every pleasure, there is an opposing pain. Now this non-melodious fellow is singing loudly and is disrupting the usual harmonies. In fact, at a point earlier, I had noticed the clangor was not so bothersome. I had come to see Papa residing in his form, come to test me, to see if I could recognize him in disguise. Now it made me smile every time I saw the cymbal player. To help understand the working of my mind that morning, I should give a little background. The night before this fellow showed up at the Mandir, I was walking with Swamiji and a group as he made his way to inspect the building of an enlarged canteen. In the group, there were Swamis, builders, and engineers all discussing the project, when suddenly I somehow saw that everyone standing before me was Papa. It was as if each one was Papa who had donned a rubber mask for the occasion. Everyone represented Papa at different stages of his evolutionary life, but within, each one was totally aware Papa. Seeing each face as a rubber mask with a smiling Papa secreted behind it, I smiled and had to control myself from bursting into hilarious laughter. Such joy, such fun. O infinite Papa, you have assumed each personality for your immortal play. You ask, what's the fun? Is the fun not part of every living thing in space? And is not every aspect filled with your ever-joyful life? Verily, where are you now? Not. Now, back to the play this morning with the unlovely voice of the Swami and painful cymbal clanging. For by now I could feel their intrusive vibrations causing considerable pain in my head and spine. The discordant singing is felt not only by me, but it brings grimaces from those lovely souls who gather for our morning song to God. Then I thought of Papa behind the rubber mask of each form and his ways of testing me. Then I saw Papa's smiling face radiate from behind each mask. I smiled. It was Papa smiling out from under my rubber mask, asking, what's the fun? Oh, it's all the fun. Joy flowed out toward all at the play. The floor of the Mandir once again became conscious bliss. Then the play took a new turn. The discordant cymbal player walked up to the unlovely voice Swami, and he said some words. Then the Swami, perhaps trying to bring his voice into alignment with others, tried to change his tune. No good. The same offensive sounds erupted from him. The cymbal-playing form of Papa stood a few feet away, listening with appraising attention to the Swami. And when the unimproved vocals returned, the cymbal Ram closed in on his prey. He spoke some intense words while shaking a finger and waved in his face at the tonal offender. This intervention stopped the intrusive notes from issuing from the Swami for the rest of the time we walked and chanted. It seemed clear that the cymbal Ram was jealously guarding his province to be the only maker of offensive noises and would brook no contenders. As prince of his realm, he removed his competition for there to be only one offender. Dispassion makes you rise above the liking or disliking the events of this world, and this brings peace. When we see and accept this world to be exactly as it should be, then we see God as the unfolding guiding force behind it all. He, in perceiving God behind all, we experience great joy. Here at the ashram are many bugs of a great variety. Whether it be mosquitoes or cockroaches, I have noticed that if I give in to being overly conscious of them, it takes on a life of its own. Then I would hear or feel bugs when there were none. There is no end to that trouble. I sat in Swamiji's room last night. Some intrepid tiny critter decided to explore the territory on my back. crawling up one side to another, up and down, and creating a ticklish situation. The thought of Papa being in another kind of rubber mask, that of the little crawling critter. When I pictured Papa's smiling face as that bug's face, it was all I could do to hide my hilarity. Oh, what fun! Papa used to exclaim, "Is the fun not about our perception, for those who have ears to hear and eyes to see?" Oh, tears of joy, tears of fun, they flow from the outer portions of the eyes. That is where the soul sheds its tears. Come, my beloved Papa, reveal to us all your secrets of joy and fun. Keep it no longer to yourself, but reveal it for the world to see. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. And then finally, December 9th, the ongoing saga of the clanging bells, a.k.a. From Pain to Bliss. This morning the symbols once again disturb my peace of worship. O Lord, you are working so very hard to purify this devotee. With undaunted enthusiasm, you continue your quest to awaken me, despite my resistance to do so. Now that I clearly see Papa working behind the scenes of the cymbal player, I feel a surge of endurance and acceptance of these painful sounds. O Infinite Beloved, you have come to test my endurance in pain and my ability to see you working as all and working through all. But even a greater lesson lay in store for me. As I rounded in procession with others during the circling mandir, the large form cymbal-playing Ram got off his seat just as my passing and took up residence just behind me. The noise was deafening to these ears and body, continued unabated. I was smiling inside. I was laughing at the obvious play of God to test my ability to see him in all. In fact, it was God's grace when he overplays his hand in this way. It was too obvious who was directing every action. At last the cymbal-playing Ram passed me by, and I thought there was some relief. Not much, because the marbled-walled mandir echoes and magnifies every sound. Just then, just when I thought I had some reprieve from the worst of the cymbal player, stopped at one of the four doors and inexplicably stared out into the darkness. When I passed, he, for no apparent reason, followed in behind me, clanging with undiminished gusto to his noisy instrument. Well, this was too much. How obvious does it have to be that all-loving Papa, residing in all and as all, was taking such tender care to cure me of all attachments and to find dispassion for the things of this world? Such love one cannot find anywhere in this wide world from a single source other than the one whom we call God. In the instant of realizing this, waves of bliss rolled up the entire being of this poor devotee. Oh, what words can express the inexpressible? Pain and bliss indeed are the same. How infinitely kind is the blissful Lord. I bow to you again and yet again, O Lord of light, bliss, and love. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. And so goes the diary notes. Sometimes we think going to an ashram will be a place filled with peace and, everything goes smoothly. We're really being thrown into the thick of battle. To find there our peace and our joy through all the different events that happen. Because wherever we go, we take ourselves with us. We take that critical mind. We take that intolerance. We take that judgment that we make about this world. Just think of all the time and energy that we put into judging other people. How they look, how they sound, just everything about them. And there's so much of our attention that goes in this way. And all the time, we're missing the most obvious, the most joyful, the most blissful experience that a human being can have. And that is the divine consciousness that exists right inside of us. Now we might ask, if that divine consciousness is inside of us, why are we not more aware of it? And it is because of our preoccupation with the things of the world. Both the Buddha and the Krishna both talked about our idea of our attachment to this world. And our attachment forms in the mind. We like certain things and we don't like other things. And this is a natural thing. We like pleasure, but we don't like pain. But it is that very preoccupation with the things of this world that keeps us from seeing that there is a greater reality, a divine reality, that underlines everything that is and everyone who exists in it. Now, it is not that everyone experiences that blissful reality, but we are all formed from it. We all come from it. It is from the very inception of our being. If God is, and God has created everything that is, then God must be everything that is. If God is what God should be, then God is that supreme reality. God is the light, is the love, is the joy, is the goodness of everything. So we might wonder, if we all come from that, why have we devolved into the very beings that we are? And it is a long story, it is a long history of how each one of us on a soul level have chosen to come into this realm of duality. God one time showed me in vision how my first incarnation in this world, I was as lava rock. The lava rock seemed almost alive as it flowed. It was red hot and moving across the surface of the earth. And I was existing in consciousness and I was watching this lava rock. And suddenly my consciousness merged with that lava rock. And I felt its movement. I felt its reality. I did not lose connection with my divine reality in order to do that. But it made me curious. It made me have a desire to experience more of that. So I merged myself into that lava rock. And then over time, I felt it cooling and solidifying. And I was conscious of all of this as if I were the rock itself. And then I moved from one thing to another because I was interested. I wanted to have that. Now, in the story of Adam and Eve in Genesis, we read about where God created everything that is. And at each stage of creation, he would say, "It is good. It is good." And then he comes to where he creates all the animals and all the plants and the earth and everything that is. It said the seventh day, but it can't mean a literal day because days didn't even exist in the beginning. It requires a sun and an earth and to create a day in that sense. So it's seven stages of creation. And that mankind was created, and then man was given the ability to name things. And so that's a particular kind of intelligence when we begin to name things. And so we name these things, and we're existing in that garden. In that garden of Eden, Adam and Eve, as it is picturesquely told, are walking in the garden, and they walk with God, they talk with God, they have perfect communion with God. And then, of course, as famously known, the serpent enters in, and the serpent begins to tempt Adam and Eve with this apple. And this has strong symbolic meaning. We too are that soul. We're in perfect communion with God. The serpent force is in the spine. It's when we take incarnation into this human body. We have the ability to name things, intelligences quickening and growing in that sense. And through that intelligence, the serpent force begins to crawl down the tree. Now the tree is the spine and the brain right within you. If you were to picture yourself with your brain and the roots of an upside down tree and then the spine is the trunk of that tree, and then the afferent and the efferent nerves are all the branches and that go out from that tree. And that the serpent is crawling down and he offers you fruit from the midst of the tree. And God had said, you may taste of all the fruits except for this fruit. And the fruit, as Sri Yukteswar tells us, is the sexual nerves. And in the beginning, man didn't have those activated. He could create through thought. Swami Ashokananda told Mother that he knew of a time when children were brought simply by a thought of the mother and the father together, and they could create a quickening inside the womb, and out of that, a child could emerge. And so there were times of more subtle means of creation. But anyway, this serpent force is crawling down, and it says, taste of these fruits of the senses. And so our consciousness got curious about that. But God had said not to do it, but we made a choice in there. I want to experience that. I want to know what that is. And on a soul level, we know that we are ever one with God. That in truth and reality, everything is from God. So even if we were to forget God, it's not that we can really go outside of God. It's just simply that consciousness can seem to get separated from God, even though without that divine intelligence and consciousness and power, none of us could operate for even a second. And so we made that choice, and we moved down into the nerves and into the body. And gradually we became separated from that divine consciousness. And we thought that our fulfillment would be out there somehow. That I would find the right thing, the right person, the right amount of money, whatever it is in our mind, in our conception, that we would think that would just make life perfect. But you know, it can never be perfect and remain perfect. Because this stage, this world, is constantly changing. And in that change, it alternates between the good and the bad, the high and the low, the pleasurable and the painful. It's just part and parcel of this world. So to withdraw ourselves and to reunite ourselves into the divine consciousness is what we are all about. It's what we strive for. It's what religion was created for, but lesser minds usually came after great minds started a religious movement, and they would turn it into a religion. It became an object into itself, and oftentimes a barrier to knowing higher divine consciousness. And this happens all over the world. It happens in India, it happens here, it happens everywhere. Because we have not yet entered into those ages where general mankind knows or appreciates about this higher divine consciousness. And so we set out usually on a more lonely path because the world doesn't join us. In fact, the world is rushing out in the opposite direction. Get this, get that. That will be your completion. Then you will be happy if you only had this vacation or if you only had this money, if you only won the lottery. Lottery is a very interesting thing because so many people who win the lottery end up declaring bankruptcy because they think they're rich, but it really takes a lot of money to be rich and they outspend themselves. And then everybody and their brother is sending them credit card applications. And so they actually end up being broke and in bigger debt than they could have ever imagined before winning the lottery. Not an interesting thing. Happiness is found right where we are, unconditioned by our outer circumstances. And this is the real thing that we have to understand about ourselves and about divine consciousness. It has always existed in us. It is not about just getting to that perfect time in life or having that perfect person in life or having that bank account all fixed. That's not where our security comes from. That is not where our real happiness comes from. Temporary happiness can come, true, but not that which we really, truly seek. It is time for us to really turn our attention. And it is not that you have to give up everything as Papa did and leave home with just one single cloth and no money. But inwardly, you have to feel that my happiness is no longer dependent on bank account or on social status or what other people think about me. I have to declare my independence from all of that. And I turn my attention within. That is what this meditation is for. It is learning to still the outward stimulations that come from this world to bring us into a state of stillness. And then in that state of stillness, we become like that body of water, great body of water. When the wind is blowing, it laps up into waves. We see white caps. There's all kinds of disturbance. But when the wind or the breath dies down, and we enter into a state of stillness, then that body of water reflects the mountains that are above, the stars, the blue sky, the sun, the moon. And that is all that divine light that is within you. Your still mind begins to perfectly reflect all that divinity inside of you. And no matter what you have done in this outward journey, what sin, so to speak, you may have committed, it all gets washed away. You're baptized in that light, in that new life, in that purity. You are born as new. And your life takes a dramatic turn for the better. It's the most wonderful, the most interesting, the most vital life you could possibly imagine. Sometimes we think of giving up our desires and our attachments, that's the end of fun. That's the end of anything interesting happening in our lives. That's the ego mind that is trying to convince us not to go that direction. It's quite the opposite. You look at anybody in this life, let's say somebody becomes jealous, and they start thinking with a jealous mind. Think how narrow their mind. They get focused on a particular person or a particular couple of people, or they get focused on a lump of gold or whatever it is that they're most wanting, most achingly wanting in this world. You think about that, and you think about how narrow the focus becomes. And then you think about somebody who is experiencing joy, somebody whose heart has opened and they feel love, not just for one or two or a few, but for everyone that you meet. I remembered one time walking down the street. It was a tree-lined street, and I was feeling this great bliss upwelling in me. And I remember thinking, all of this and it's for free? It's an interesting way of thinking about it, isn't it? It's for free? And it was. And it was. And then the thought came, will this end? And that's a very interesting thing, because that's a thought that comes from the ego mind. And what I noticed was like I was floating high in a balloon of this bliss. And the moment that entered in, will this one day end? It was like attaching some lead weight to that balloon, and the balloon started to descend back to earth. And it was maddening, because it's not what I wanted at all. So the mind is very subtle in that way. So how do we purify the mind so that it doesn't interfere with that state of bliss? And it is through God remembrance. Chanting God's name, thinking on God's attributes, meditating deeply within and making contact with that ever new joy, until we really purify this mind. Now the mind loves joy when it comes. It wants it to stay always. But it is the other parts, the past parts of our mind that come in and begin to attach lead weights to it. So let us not be overly conscious of the lead weights. Let's be conscious of God. Let us not be overly conscious of the things that we have done wrong in this life. Everybody's lives are scattered with skeletons behind them. No one has lived that perfect life. And so no one would make it if it required a perfect life in that sense. Mother used to say that she didn't live a perfect life in this life. She didn't live a life like a saint all the way through her life. Now, many of the saints didn't live good lives in the beginning. They lived riotous lives. And it was the very duality of that that drove them to God, because their lives made them so miserable. So don't think that you have to have lived this perfect life. It's what you, not what you have done. It's what you do now. It's what you do now with your life. It's how you turn your life. There's a wonderful story of Valmiki in India. And Valmiki was this robber. He was somebody who waited on the side of the road for people to come by. He was a big, powerful man. And he would threaten them. He says, either give me everything you have, and I'll let you walk away, or I will kill you and I will take everything that you have. Either way, you're giving up everything you have. And so he actually killed people, because some people didn't want to give up what they had. So he is a terrible man. And then one day he was walking, he was waylaying the road, and came this Narada, a wonderful being, a messenger from heaven. And he came walking along, and Valmiki went to hold him up. And Narada didn't look at him with fear or with covetousness for anything that he had. He's looking at him in a way that nobody had ever looked at Valmiki. And so Valmiki saw this, and he says, how is this? How are you looking at me? What is this? And Narada said, I'm looking at you with divine love. And so then Narada says, I have a question for you. You hold these people up. You kill some people. You know that there is karma. You know that you will have to pay a price for this. And so Valmiki said, in kind of a vague way, yes, I suppose so. But you know, I have to support my family. And Narada said, well, that's very interesting. Will your family share in your karma with you? Well, yes, of course. They get the fruits of it. They'll share it with me. He said, why don't you go and ask them? I'll wait here. So off Valmiki went, and he asked his wife, will you share in the karma for all these ill-gotten gains? No, no, it's not my concern how you earn your money, only that you supply for your family. But that's not about me. You'll have to take that. And he got the same answer from his children. He was very disheartened at this. And he came back to Narada. And so he said, I want nothing more with this world. It's all a sham. It's all a fool's errand. I want what you have. That look in your eyes, that is what I want. And so Narada taught him how to chant God's name, Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. And so he chanted that again and again and again. And he chanted it for so long that finally the ants built an anthill right over the top of him. And that's how he got his name, Valmiki. It means anthill. And he was wrapped in bliss and for so many years that way. Narada once again was walking down the path. And he knew that he's inside this huge, I've seen them before, these anthills are huge, they're 6 feet tall. And he broke it apart. Inside was Nara wrapped in bliss, not needing to eat or breathe or anything. And he said, I have a task for you. You are to go back out into the world. He says, what do I want with this world? Just leave me be. I want to experience this bliss. No, 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 no. You have a task. And so he had an important task ahead of him, and Narada sent him out on it. So he is proof that no matter what kind of life that we've lived, we can turn it around, we can change it. We can experience that peace, that bliss, that uplifting current, that the serpent turns And instead of downward facing, it becomes upward facing in the spine. When we meditate, we focus at the ajna, the point between the eyebrows. And through that, we lift the consciousness up. And it's a very interesting thing. You read Jesus' words in the New Testament. And in those words, he's always speaking of the serpent in a positive way. Before, it had always been known as the evil one. But he said, even as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, so must you. And Moses made a serpent on a brass pole. That brass pole is that golden light within your spine. That's the pole. And the serpent is the force that comes up through that. The ancient symbol for a physician is a pole with twin serpents going up on it. It's what the AMA continues to use today. They don't understand the origins of it. The pole is the spine, and the two serpents are the two currents that come up the spine, the Ida and Pingala, and come up and they meet at the top of the head. And that originally, physicians were realized masters. And it was from this that they got their science. And so when you understand the origins of these things, then you see why the symbology was very important. And so all of these references Jesus made were positive towards be wise like the serpent, he says. So you see, that's what happens when you turn the serpent force facing upwards, is that it informs your own intelligence with divine intelligence. It gives you inner direction. It gives you purity. It uplifts you. It gives you bliss and joy and love, divine love. All of these gifts are waiting for you. If you will but reach out and do what is required in order to attain to this higher life. For a higher life you are meant. I want you to remain in those blessings. Feel that uplifting current. Feel the transformation within your own being. And to know that in truth and reality, you belong to a greater reality. Call it whatever you might. Nirvana, God, Brahma, Allah. So many different names for all the same experience and consciousness. And bliss. In India, it is called Sat Chit Ananda. Sat is the pure being. Chit is consciousness of that pure being. And Ananda is bliss. So it is a blissful awareness of the eternal being within yourself. And then throughout all creation. This is really a remarkable story. The story of every human who is evolving and working toward the divine. It is your story. And to fully embrace that story and not wait a moment longer to make it your very own. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai. Victory to God, victory to the light. Please join me in prayer. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of Thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet and surrender myself to Thee. I feel the power of Thy perfection surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence are radiant with Thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with Thee. I and my Father are one.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Bow to the light within you. May that Christ light ever shine from you, revealing divine love in your heart, making you perfect and pure in Him.